Okay, thank you. All right. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and would you please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to confirm we have a quorum. Everyone is here. And I'll remind you on public comments this morning, all public comment is on only the items that are on the agenda. So with that, I think we are ready to begin. And so we're going to start with the first item. And if you'll let me just 1 second here. Before we begin, I will first actually open the public hearing to receive public comment in support of or in opposition to the proposed rate increase and receive any further written protest, too. So if there are any other written protests, make sure before we close this session that you do turn it in so it can count. Okay? And would you like to comment before we get started, Mr. Carmel?
Yeah, Madam President, let me just perhaps go over the procedure very briefly. So you know this is the continued public hearing on the proposed sewer and water rate increases, the protest hearing under Prop 218. We have Alex Handlers here today who's going to give a brief presentation regarding the rate increase itself. Bartle and Wells prepared the study under which the rate increase will be effective. We also have Elena Cano here today. She's the assistant county clerk recorder. She's gracious enough to have agreed to act as our protest official for the protest hearing. So we'll receive a presentation from Alex. And at that point, we'll actually start taking public comment. And it's important to note that protests will only be received through the close of the public hearing, at which point Elena will begin the tabulation process. At the close of the public hearing, we'll probably need a little break because there's quite a few ballots. If at that time there's not a final tabulation, we'll probably need to continue it until the end of the regular business agenda, at which time hopefully there'll be a final tabulation. We may need more time than that because there's quite a few protest ballots. So at this time, I guess we'll have Alex he'd give his presentation, and then
We'll follow with public comment.
With public comment.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Director Rice.
Just a question, real quick. Did we check the PO box this morning?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And the mailbox.
Mailbox, PO box, all have been checked.
Thank you.
Okay, and do feel free, as this gentleman did, just please. If you have your protest form today, before we do close this part of the meeting, make sure you just bring it right up as he did to Monique, okay?
Madam President, one other thing. For a valid protest to exist, a majority protest, it'll require 50% plus one of the parcels protesting. The actual numbers are 1,969 protests for water and 1,915 protests for sewer. And then one thought to expedite the process, we may want to allow the protest official to start now in the adjacent room counting the ballots. She'll do a rough count to start with to see whether we're approaching the number required for a majority protest. And that'll allow her to get a little ahead of us so we won't have a long delay, hopefully. Something to consider.
I don't see a problem with that because now that we've opened this hearing, and until we conclude, then you may still turn in your form to Monique. You could start because she opens every envelope and checks it. And so, Ms. Cano, would you like to begin then? Okay, well, Thank you. And you'll be working right in this room? Okay. Okay. So then the first thing we'll do is we do have Mr. Handler here again today. Thank you for being here. And he will go again through and review the actual Prop 218 and what we're doing. And then I'd like to hear from public comment. We have some public comment on this item, and so that will follow Mr. Handler.
Great, thank you. Nice to see everybody. So I'm pretty much going to go through the same presentation you've heard before. I know we've got a lot of new folks in the audience tonight, so maybe it's good. I'll try to keep it reasonably quick. And I'll see if I can get this thing to work. Minor technical difficulties. Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
There we are.
Great. So I'm going to just, again, give a quick summary over our key findings and recommendations from the water and sewer rate studies that we've been conducting. I'll give a quick background. First, go talk about the water finances and rates, then the sewer, and also show some detailed impacts on what the proposed changes mean to customers here in Cambria for different levels of use. A little talk about Prop 218, which guides the rate increase process, and where we go from here. Background, this is a community-governed public agency. You've got about 6,400 folks here within the community. You've got a substantial tourist population that comes in. When I look at the water and wastewater enterprises, the key thing is they're funded almost entirely by water and sewer rates. So those rates have got to be adequate to fund the cost of service, which includes operating, maintaining the facilities, the infrastructure, paying debt service, making necessary capital improvements over time. So what we did is kind of twofold. We developed some detailed cash flow projections, and we also took a closer look at the rate structure to make sure the rates fairly and equitably recovered costs from the full customer base. As far as the process, this goes back actually to 2014. A rate study was initiated, then temporarily deferred as the district focused on the emergency water supply. We came back late last year, did a bunch of analysis. We worked closely with staff, the ad hoc committee, in November to make sure the final recommendations were, you know, reflected the costs and were in line with the policy preferences of the district. Notices of a public hearing were mailed way back in November 13th, but alas, I'll take full credit for this. I had a wrong zip code in one area, so it was deemed preferable not just to hold the hearing on the 29th and call it a day, but give the folks an additional 45 days and continue the hearing over so there could be additional time to make sure everyone was duly noted and had time to get their protests in, which are now being counted. We had a board meeting on the 29th and kind of walked through this. I think we had a lot of other folks out at that meeting. So here again is the second continuation of the public hearing. If the rates go into effect, they would start on March 1st. Water, to understand the water rates, you have to understand what's happened with water use in recent years. Folks here know you're in a stage 3 water emergency since 2014. When that was declared, the board also declared, as was automatically to kick in, some automatic penalties for higher levels of water use. And those penalties were very effective, as well as the customer response. Water sales came down about 43% from the pre-drought norms. And the other thing I was going to mention, separate from these rates, the district also adopted the water shortage emergency rates for the advanced water treatment plant. Those rates enabled the district to get the financing for the plant, which is now up and running, is my understanding. This slide here shows what's happened with water use in the community on a bi-monthly basis. The different colors represent the prior years going back to 2010-11. You can see water use is pretty consistent from year to year. It's higher in the summer and lower in the winter. Higher, you have a tourism industry. People use more outdoor water use, pretty common. So this is a pretty common pattern. Up until you hit that declared water shortage emergency, since then, water use has plummeted. We did a calculation based on the prior fiscal year. It was over 40% lower, and you were starting from a pretty low place to begin with. So really a tremendous response from your community to the drought. The biggest response I've seen in any community I've ever worked with. So folks have done a fantastic job of cutting back. Your water enterprise is facing a number of financial challenges on different fronts. One is the costs have risen over time, but there haven't been corresponding rate increases for many years. Two, obviously, the reduced water sales have taken a huge bite out of revenues, but only reduced expenditures by a teeny tiny bit. And the third thing is the district's been committed to keeping rates as low as possible for many years, as many agencies are. You have done some capital improvements, but a lot of key projects have been deferred. They need to get done to keep the system in good operating condition, and a few of those projects I'm just going to mention are the Fiscalini tank, the Rodeo Ground pump station, you've got a Stewart Street tank. These are projects that need to get done to ensure safe, reliable service at some point. And that's what I was going to mention. Other than those emergency rates, the district really has hardly increased rates in about 20 years. So you're at a point now where your rates are substantially below the cost of service. And here is a long-term history of rates. The blue shows what the charge is for a customer using 4 units of water. About 55% of your residential customers use 4 units or less in a bi-monthly billing period. Again, very low. And you can see going back to 1993, the charge hasn't really risen that much. It's only risen a few times over 20 years. Had you taken that charge from 1993 and escalated at 3% a year, it'd be a lot higher. However, 3% is not necessarily a fair representation of cost inflation for water and sewer utilities. Maybe it is for consumer price inflation, but utilities, which are very labor, capital intensive, other indices show that their inflation is closer to 5%. So I just kind of showed on here this dotted line where the rates would be if you used what's more considered inflation for utilities. I mentioned we developed some detailed financial projections. We try to build in the best, latest, greatest information we can, use slightly conservative assumptions for planning purposes. So just to walk through some of those assumptions so folks get a sense of what was built into this. It was based on the 2015-16 budget, which itself is a pretty bare-bones budget. We assumed the end of the Stage 3 water shortage rate penalties at some point, but we also assumed that your water use would rebound a little bit from where it currently is and end up at 70% of the pre-drought levels as kind of a new long-term baseline. We did not factor in any growth. Although there are a lot of critical capital needs that the system faces, we accounted only for $1 million of debt financing for some of the most critical projects based on consultation with the district. We included $250,000 per year for annual maintenance, rehabilitation. It sounds like a lot, but for an agency your size, $250,000 really doesn't go that far considering all the pipelines, tanks, and facilities that you have out there. We used operating cost inflation at 4%, and we kept in the reduced costs for professional services. I know that was a focus of the district over the past year, get those costs down, so that's baked into the future projections too. What are our findings? Not surprisingly, that you need some significant rate increases to restore the financial stability. And even after you get your rate increases in place, the recommendation is small, gradual rate increases each year to keep the rates in line with gradual escalation of costs. The next thing we did was took a look at your rate structure, and I'll show you the results of all this in a second. I want to show some observations. These are your current rates. They've been in effect since 2009. Folks pay a fixed charge, which has historically included the first 6 units of water for no additional cost with that fixed charge. That was reduced to 4 units as part of the emergency, the water actions taken by the district. The commercial rates higher. All commercial rates pay, you know, a little over double what the residential customers pay, even though this includes some very small commercial as well as the largest commercial folks here in the district. And then folks also pay usage charges. Again, none for their first chunk of units, but after that they start paying according to an inclining tiered rate schedule where the rate gradually bumps up little by little as people use more and more water. Now these tiers might look fine, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, but you don't have many residential customers here. By the time you get to the first or the second tier here, you've already gotten almost all your residential use there. So the tiers weren't necessarily meaningfully aligned with the water usage patterns that we saw from your residential customers. Over on the commercial side, it's a little different. You've got small commercial who pay that same fixed charge. Everyone gets the first, you know, chunk of units for free. Then they pay according to this inclining tier. It's not often we see tiered rates for commercial in the industry out there. You're not the only one that has it, obviously. A lot of folks do. But what happens when it's when you have a total tier thing like this, the small customers use their water here. The large customers blast through that, get all their water at the higher end, even if they're being super efficient. It's just by the nature of they're a larger customer. So those are just some of the observations that we sought to address in this. I already talked about all that. So what we came up with and worked through with staff, we looked at a number of different rate structure options and honed it as the process went, and I think came up with something that's very logical, it's very justifiable in the numbers, and it reflects the cost of service. We're keeping the fixed charge pretty low, similar to where it is now, $25.50 for a bi-monthly billing period. That means many of your customers are paying, you know, $12, $13 per month for water service, which is amazingly low considering the water supplier situation you're in. So we were able to keep that fixed charge low, but on the other side of the coin for the residential customers, you're going to have to start paying for every unit of water. This district can't afford to keep giving a ton of your water over 50% away for no cost. People should be paying for that, but they'll be paying, again, towards an inclining tier rate structure. Not exactly the same as it was in the past, but it'd be lower rates for the first four units and step up if people get into that middle range. Again, this is the first one is, you know, over 50% of the water. This one is probably another 40-something percent. This is only for the very highest levels at the top tier. So that's the change. The fixed charge stays low. That's going to benefit low users. Yes, they're going to have to start paying for some water use. On the commercial side, we're transitioning from a single charge where everyone pays $54 or so per month, regardless of the size of the customer, to what probably 99% of agencies in California have, where commercial customers pay based on meter size, with larger customers who put a lot more demand on the system paying a larger charge in line with that additional demand they place on the system. So a small commercial customer gets a benefit of this. They're going to pay lower rates than they currently are. The largest customers are going to pay higher fixed charges. So a small office, instead of paying, you know, $54, is going to see their fixed charge go down to $25.50, same as it is for a residential customer. They have a similar demand profile. As you get to the largest customer, which could be a large, you know, hotel, restaurant, something along those lines, shopping center, that's going to be a higher charge. People aren't going to like paying more, but I'll tell you, from working with many, many agencies around California, these are still very low fixed charges compared to most of the agencies I work for. On the commercial side, though, all customers also are going to have to start paying from the first unit of service. You can't afford to keep giving away a lot of units for free with that fixed charge. Commercial is going to pay uniform rate, though, which is the most common way. It's in California. That way, there's no one could charge it's unfair for large commercial customers versus small commercial customers, the way the tiering system works. And that charge works out to be the middle rate of the residential customers. So there's kind of parity. I think it adds, it's a logical approach to your rates. In future years, what's built in is 4% annual rate increases to keep the rates moving along the line. And I know the board wants to weigh in on that each year and review the finances to make sure those rates are needed. So you always have the ability of reducing the rates from what's adopted in the Prop 218. You just can't exceed them without going through the process again. So what are the rate impacts on the water side? We're going to see small for the fixed charges, a very small increase for residential accounts. Small commercial accounts are now going to benefit from paying a charge that's less than half that they currently are. The biggest impact is on the largest commercial accounts. We're going to pay based on their capacity and their meter size, like most agencies in California. On the usage charge, everyone starts paying from the first unit of water, which is not the way it is now. That's going to have a bigger percentage impact on residential and small commercial accounts who that's most of their water, and those, you know, it is currently free. Now they're going to have to start paying for it. But it's also kind of offsets for the largest commercial customers the current tiering system that you have. All customers are going to pay higher quantity charges than they currently do. For the residential folks, it'll move from that 10-tiered rate structure to a three-tiered rate structure that's more aligned with what we see as residential consumption patterns, and the commercial will pay the uniform rate set at the middle tier. That's water. On sewer, similar situation. Your sewer enterprise is also operating in deficit mode. You haven't done many rate increases over the past 20 years, which has impacted the sewer finances. Again, there's been a lot of deferred maintenance on the sewer side. You've tackled the most critical things you need to do, but there's a lot of other capital needs out there that haven't been addressed. You've been out of line with your, out of compliance with your debt service coverage covenants. However, you do have a debt service issue that is ending after this current fiscal year, so you don't have to worry about debt service coverage for that issue going forward. And the nice thing is that's going to free up about $174,000 of debt service payments that you used to make that now can be used to offset the rate increases. The big wild card here within the district in the future is the wastewater treatment plant. The district knows that there are going to have to be some major upgrades and investments put into that plant. Nothing like the levels that you're seeing up the road in Los Osos or Morro Bay. You have to build new treatment plants. But these things are these treatment plants have to meet very high regulatory permit requirements, and there are going to have to be some, my understanding, some substantial improvements to make sure you continue to meet your regulatory requirements. So we did not include any of this treatment plant in the five-year rate projections. No one knows exactly when this is going to be hit, when the regional board is going to require these projects to be done. We just know it's coming, so that's just a warning. In the future, this is something you might have to come back to the table for. Could be within 5 years, but I think the hope is it's outside that five-year window. The rate history, I mentioned there's been minimal rate increases over 20 years. In fact, there's been no rate increases in 18 of the past 22 years. When I looked at the rates since 1993, you compound it every year. The rates have gone up by an average of about 1.4% a year. A home using 6 units of water on a bi-monthly basis over the past 20 years has seen their bill increase about $10 over 20 years. However, people who used to use 6 units of water don't use 6 units anymore. Thanks to the tremendous response to the drought, people have cut back. A lot of people now are at the 4 level, so they've seen their bill really go from $27 to about $35 over 20 years. No one likes to pay more, but I want to point out that consumer price inflation has increased almost 70% over the same time frame. So in real dollar terms, the rates people are paying today are lower in inflation-adjusted terms than they were way back in 1993. You're probably not the only agency in the state that has that, but I don't see that very often over such a long time frame. So that's why, again, I point out the district has historically had a pretty strong preference for trying to keep rates as low as possible, but you do have to recover your cost of service. Here, we're showing a customer with 4 units, which is, again, over 55% of the residential bills are at that level. Had the rates been increased at 3% a year, they'd be up here at 5% up here. Doesn't mean you needed to do this. It's just for informational purposes, that the rates are a lot lower than it had they been escalated each year by a few percent. So again, we developed some detailed financial projections to evaluate the overall level of rate increases needed. Again, based on the best info, slightly conservative assumptions, the 2015-16 budget was the basis for, it's pretty bare bones budget, the basis for the projections going forward. Again, your water use was projected at 70% of pre-drought levels. Why do we care about water use? Because a portion of the sewer rate is based on water consumption. We assume no growth. Again, $250,000 a year for annual maintenance, rehabilitation. Is that enough? Probably not over the very long term, but it's something that will allow you to address the most critical repairs and replacements. We did not include funding for the treatment plant improvements that are at some point coming down there. Operating inflation, we assumed at 4% a year, which is pretty reasonable. And we're assuming that SRF loan, the good news, is reaching final maturity this year, so you won't have to pay on that anymore. So obviously, rate increases are needed to restore financial stability. The good news is they were relatively small rate increases overall because of the freeing up of that debt service that you're going to apply instead towards offsetting the future rates. Again, we looked at the rate structure. This is your current rate structure. It's been in place since 2009, for many years. Most of the costs on the sewer side are fixed. Most agencies in California have largely fixed sewer rates. Your sewer charge, $65 per bi-monthly billing period, so that's about, you know, a little over 30, almost $32.50 per month. All residential and commercial customers pay that same fixed charge. That includes the first unit of water use at no additional charge, and beyond that, there's a charge of $1.94 for each unit of metered water use. So everyone pays the same. The base charge includes one unit of water, and there's no differences in the rate paid on the commercial side, whether it's a very low-strength commercial customer, such as a library or an office or a store, or a high-strength commercial customer, such as a restaurant that puts much higher-strength wastewater into the system, which in turn causes significantly more effort and cost for treating that wastewater at your wastewater treatment plant. So most agencies in California have commercial rates that vary based on wastewater strength. So that's what we were proposing a transition to. Keeping a fixed charge, largely fixed charge, for your residential customers, we're actually recommending a reduction in the fixed charge, going down from $65 to $56 a month. So customers will see a reduction in that fixed charge that they pay. At the same time, the usage charge is going to be increased from $1 plus per month, $1.94 per month, to $3.24 per month is where the math worked out. So a little bit lower fixed charge, a little bit higher usage charge. People who use more are going to pay more. People who use less are going to pay a little bit less than they currently are. On the commercial side, it's still going to be the same fixed charge. However, we're going to have a few classes of commercial customers that are in line with the wastewater strength of those classes. Class one is the lower strength accounts, offices, retail stores, laundromats, schools, etc., library, I would assume. They would pay a charge of $2.84 per each unit of water use right after they pay their fixed charge. Class three, I'll go to the other end, is the highest strength accounts, restaurants, bakeries, markets that have meat, seafood grinders, mixed-use accounts, where more than 30% of the discharge is coming from those high-strength flows. We were actually pretty conservative in the assumptions that we use. We try to be reasonable, so no one can claim that these rates are unfair. And the rate for them would be a little closer to $5 per unit of discharge, with class two being the folks who are in the middle. They're not low strength, they're not high strength, they're somewhere in the middle. They pay a rate that's in the middle based on estimated wastewater strength. So what are the general rate impacts of the sewer rates? I know I've mentioned it, so I'm sorry if I repeat myself as I go through here. Reduced fixed bi-monthly sewer charge from 65 to 56. So that's a reduction in the bills that folks are going to pay. Low-use customers, who that constitutes almost all their bill, are actually going to see a decrease in the sewer rates that offsets some of the increase in water rates. On the usage charges, we're getting rid of that first unit that's currently provided at no additional cost. Everyone's going to have to pay for every unit that they use. The residential rates going from $1.94 to $3.24 per unit. So that's going to be, you know, lower fixed charge, a little bit higher variable charge. Some folks will pay less than before. You use a lot of wastewater, use a lot of water and put a lot of wastewater in the system, you'll pay a little more than you currently do. And on the commercial side, again, moving to three wastewater strength classes to make sure that the charges are reflecting the cost of treating that wastewater at your wastewater treatment plant. The lowest impact is going to be on businesses with low-strength wastewater, professional offices, retail stores. You've got a lot of them here. The biggest impact is going to be on businesses with higher-strength wastewater, you know, moderate to high restaurants, hotels. They're going to pay a lower fixed charge, but they tend to use a lot of water, and now they're going to have to pay a little bit more in for treating that wastewater in line with the cost of treatment. So the next slides kind of summarize the impact. We try to show what does this all mean to your ratepayers overall. And we try to factor everything in. So there's a lot of different charges that get paid. Sorry for throwing a big slide full of numbers up here. No one likes to see that. But currently, the top part shows the water charges. People pay that fixed. This is for someone using 4 units of water every 2 months. Again, that's, when we looked at the data, it was about 55% of all the customers were at or below this level of the bills. So currently folks pay a fixed charge. At that level of use, they're not paying any quantity charge. They're paying less than $12 a month for water. They're also paying the emergency water supply charges. So their water bill currently is in the range of $43. Again, this is a moderately low-use customer. I'm sure a lot of folks here are in higher levels. On the sewer bill, the same level of use would equate to a bill of $65 fixed charge plus a little less than $6 in the variable charge, a little over $70. So the total bimonthly bill would be about $114. We're talking about a monthly charge of $56.85. Many agencies I work with have sewer charges that are above this alone, a fixed charge. What we're proposing, this is for next year's rate that would kick in as soon as March 1st if everything went through. Folks would still pay a relatively low fixed charge. Now they're going to have to start paying for every unit of water, which bumps up the water charges, the water consumption charges here. The emergency water supply charges would be the same. You do have some temporary, this doesn't include the temporary water supply charges for the cost of the operations of the facility. This is the buy-in for the financing and funding of the facility itself. And so the water bill under proposed would be $70.50, so it's quite a bit higher. On the sewer side, the fixed charge goes down from 65 to 56. The quantity charge would go up from less than 6 to about 13. So the bill would actually come out for this level of water use, again, 55% of the bills, a little bit lower than it currently is. So you add it all together, folks would be paying less than $140 a month for water and sewer service, a little less than $70 a month, $140 bimonthly, about $70 a month. So the overall increase works out to be, it's going to be a little over $25 for the bimonthly water bill, about $13 per month for these combined increases for 55% of the bills. We also ran the numbers for customers using a little bit higher levels of water use. When you get up to 6 units of water for every 2 months, that's 75% of your residential bills are at or below this level of use. I won't walk through all the numbers. I'll just point to the bottom line. These folks would see an increase of $135 and change to $168 and change. The increase is $33 every 2 months, or $16 and change on a monthly basis. And again, this is the first increase in about 7 years. And here's a customer using 8 units of water per bimonthly billing period. By here, you're getting to 85% of the residential bills. They'd see a bimonthly impact of $40, a monthly impact of about $20. No one likes rate increases, but even with these rate increases, your rates are going to be very reasonable compared to many other agencies out there because you're starting from a low place. So these are increases off what's starting as a relatively low rate basis. So we did some surveys. Everyone always wants to know, how do we compare with other folks out there? This is only for informational purposes. My take is it almost doesn't matter. Everyone's got to fund their own cost of service, but still everyone likes to see this. So we will go through. This first set of charts assumes that folks at every agency use the same levels of water. So we're comparing a customer here with 4 units of bimonthly use across all agencies. The reality is people use different amounts in different agencies, and with the water conservation cutbacks that your community has kicked in, you're using less water than most of the other communities out there. So it's almost like you're comparing your bill at your level with an artificially low level of use compared to some of these other communities. But we compare it across the board, everyone using 4 units of water. That's about 50 gallons per day. Currently, you have all your charges together. You're kind of in the middle of the pack. With the proposed rates, yes, it's an increase, but you're higher than some, but you're lower than many others. And many of these other agencies have already adopted multi-year rate increases or are in the process of looking at rate increases. So we're kind of showing your proposed rates against their current rates. Everyone else is going to be increasing as well. A lot of folks dealing with the same situation that you are. Again, here's the customer using 6 units of water per bimonthly billing period. 75% of the residential bills are at or below this level. Currently, you're right in the middle of the pack. Your proposed rates, upper middle range, but again, a lot of other folks are going to be increasing too. And for the folks using 8 units per bimonthly billing period, 100 gallons per day, for most communities, this would be considered a pretty low level of water use. Here, 85% of your residential bills are at or below this level, thanks to the low levels of use with cutbacks. Again, similar story. You're kind of in the middle of the pack now. And that includes the emergency water supply rates. With the proposed rates, you're going to be upper middle range, but again, everyone else is going to be increasing too. But again, I mentioned that's not the fairest way of comparing rates, because we know folks in many other agencies out there aren't facing the same water supply situation you are. They haven't had to put in emergency treatment plants. They weren't running out of water. They tend to use more water. So we did another survey. We adjusted it to account that folks in other areas might use a little bit more water, and I still was very conservative about what other agencies were using. I put the assumptions down here in the bottom if anyone ever wants to look, but currently this is a customer using 6 units of water bi-monthly. That's 3 units per month, 75% of the residential bills at or below this level. They use a lot more water in Paso Robles and Atascadero than you do. Some agencies have pretty low use also, like Los Osos, but they still use more than folks here. So currently, when we adjust it for actual usage in each agency, you're the lowest compared to these agencies that we surveyed. Even with the proposed rates, you're going to be one of the lowest out there compared to what the typical bills are of other communities. We also looked at it with someone using 8 units of water bi-monthly. Currently, you're at the lower end. You're going to end up in the middle range compared to typical levels of use at these other agencies. The final thing I wanted to talk about was Prop 218, which is why we are having these written protests counted. This was enacted back in 1996, and it added parts to the California Constitution governing all sorts of charges. Article 13D, Section 6, governs property-related charges, which have been subsequently deemed to include water and sewer and garbage rates. So there's two types of requirements you have for raising rates. One is you have to follow the procedural requirements, which you have, and two is the rates have to meet the substantive requirements. And I'm going to go through those because there's been a series of evolving court cases that have kind of furthered the public's understanding of what Prop 218 is supposed to mean. So the procedural requirements, you did that. You mailed notices to all the ratepayers of the public hearing. You gave folks an additional 45 days to get their notices in due to the zip code issue. So folks have had a long time, more than 45 days, to get protests in. And the rate increases are subject to majority protests. This is not a vote. It's not meant to be a ballot. Water and sewer is about recovering cost of service. So Prop 218 specifically exempted water and sewer rates from voting requirements that there might be for sales taxes. But there is this majority protest process. Written protests are received from more than 50% of the parcels, you can't move forward with the rate increase. And I know that's happened here in the past. The substantive requirements, one is the revenues from the charges can't exceed the cost of service. They certainly don't. They're currently below the cost of service. The whole point of our analysis was try to get the rates back in line with the cost of service. And we have financial projections, and the district provides audited financial statements every year demonstrating compliance. Two is that the revenues can only be used for the purpose collected. And again, you've got a whole audits independently audited each year. You have a budget process you go through. Your water and sewer rates are only used for the purpose for which they're collected. In fact, they've been subsidized a little bit in recent years by separate funds that the district has. The amount of fee can't exceed the proportional cost of service attributed to the parcel. The courts have recognized that there's no single correct way of doing rates. It's not a perfect science, but you have to be reasonable, and you have to use reasonable assumptions in assigning costs. So we've done that in our analysis. We calculated rates from the ground up to make sure they were fair, and we designed them to make sure they're equitably recovering costs from everyone, understanding different people may have different interpretations of equity, but you have a solid basis for these rates. And finally, the fees can only be charged if the service is used or immediately available to the property owner. And the good news is you're only charging these water and wastewater rates to properties that have voluntarily connected to the water and sewer systems. You're not charging them to vacant property. So the whole purpose of this, what we did with the rates, is to make it comply with Prop 218. So where are we now? I always like to mention the rates are a balance of competing objectives. There's no single correct answer. Obviously, you want to meet all your funding needs. At the same time, there's been a longstanding desire to try to keep rates as affordable as possible for folks. So somewhere in the middle, we meet funding their basic needs, but, you know, not funding probably some additional projects that you'd probably like to do down the line. There's always the issue of equity and fairness. There's different legitimate perspectives. Everyone has a different take on what fair is. But I think in this rate study, we've got some good input along the way and came up with, I think, is a very balanced and fair approach that's supported by the data. This public hearing was actually started back in December 29th. It's being continued today. If implemented, the new rates would kick in on March 1st, and then the future rate increases would be slated to go in effect on January 1st of each subsequent year. So that concludes my rambling presentation here. I know folks here referred it a few times, so sorry about that. But hopefully it educates people a little more into what the process is that we went through here. And with that, I will turn it back over to the board.
Thank you. Once again, I appreciate your extremely comprehensive, data-driven, very factual report and the work that went into it and the work of the ad hoc committee that's been working with you. So at this time, then, we will move to public comment. And we do have a request for public comment first from Douglas Keene.
Good morning, Madam President, board members. Looking at the website, which has a little dust on it, needs some repair, I found that one of your duties, or at least one of your goals, is to provide economical water service. Understandable. I found several examples where you might be failing to do that very goal or to attain that goal, one of which I would like to cite today, and being as we have limited time and numerous speakers, maybe I'll be back with others. In the year 2014, the governor of the state of California was paid $212,639 for the year. The year before that, in 2013, oh, by the way, that's for a population of 38.8 million people. The year before that, in 2013, the general manager for the state, I mean for the village of Cambria, California, with a population of 6,400 people, was paid $267,503. Are you folks meeting that goal? Are you a board or a cash cow? It seems a little out of proportion. You see where I'm going with this? It's a little, the governor, the general manager, sure, he's a fine general manager. It's a little out of hand. You guys got to look at that. Thank you.
I'm going to ask again on the applause, when people have public comment, that everyone be treated fairly. So, with that, as long as you're willing to applaud for everyone sharing their own personal opinion, that's fine. But we don't want it to turn into this kind of popularity thing. And it's not to comment on your public comment whatsoever. But I would just like for us to keep this in mind. Next, we have a public comment from Lisa Tansman.
Is the plant currently running? Is a question. No, it's not. Okay. In the proposed classes of fees, I think that schools and mortuaries should be the same rate class. Schools were under the cheapest one, which I think is great, but I think mortuaries probably have the same impactful service to a community and shouldn't be charged more money for that. They were on the same category as hotels and restaurants. And there it showed hotels with restaurants, and restaurants were on the third class, but I didn't see where hotels that didn't have restaurants were in that same category, and I would hope that it would be the same for any of the motels or hotels, whether they have a restaurant or not. And another comment that I wanted to make was, I don't know what all the salaries and benefits are for everyone involved, but perhaps if everyone took a little bit of a decrease, that could offset the increase that is being proposed. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes public comment. So we are moving now into the close of the public hearing. If there are any further written protests to be turned in, now is the moment. And so we will close the public hearing, and I would like to take a brief 5-minute recess, and then we'll return and we will move into continuing with the meeting on our regular business. Thank you. Okay. Yes. Okay, I'd like to ask everyone to please take their seats, and we will continue. And so now we are going to receive the report of the results of the tabulation from the protest official. So, Ms. Cano, if you would come forward, please. And we would like to give you a warm Cambria welcome. Welcome and thank you today.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam President and Honorable Board. It is my pleasure to announce that we have finished the tabulation and the counting of all of the ballots that have been received prior to this morning's public hearing, as well as the protests that were received during the public hearing. And the total tabulation count was 1,219. That concludes my reporting out. If you have any other questions, feel free to ask.
Okay, thank you. So you have then counted 1,219.
That's correct.
Prime number. Very good. All right, then I think what we want to do after receiving this, the numbers that we needed, if you would go ahead and confirm what that means. And thank you again.
Madam President, that's significantly below what would be required for a majority protest, which would be 1,969 parcels for water and 1,915 parcels for sewer, which means that you can go ahead and consider the resolution that would establish the rate increases.
Thank you. Okay, from the board, do we have a comment or motion, Director Sanders?
Madam Chair, before we get to the business of adopting the resolution, I'd like to clarify something that was said during the public hearing. A gentleman reported that the general manager's salary is, I wrote it down correctly, $267,573. One of my favorite sayings is, everybody is entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. That is not the case. The general manager's salary is $160,000 a year. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any other discussion or comments, or Director Barrender?
I would move that we had What do we have to move? We have to move.
To move something?
Adopt the resolution.
I move that we adopt resolution 012016.
Second the motion.
Okay.
I do have a comment, though.
All right. It has been moved and seconded. Discussion?
Yes, I think that 1,200 protests is a significant number. I don't think that we should ignore those people. I tend to think that there was a lot of misdirection that people may have made their decision on. I personally, at every opportunity, would ask why people were protesting. In most cases, it was not really relevant to the rate increase. It was more that they didn't like, you know, the trucks, or they one time ran over and we wouldn't give them a break on their rates or whatever. And I think that if there's a possibility, if legal counsel thinks that it's appropriate for us to do a survey and find out how many people that protested, did they in fact ever see our handler's presentation? What was their reason for protesting? I think we can serve that constituency better if we do an outreach program. So this is an opportunity for me to express that opinion. I'll kind of leave it at that. The general manager might want to take that into case, but I think it would be good to have a kindlier and gentler CCSD if we address the problems that people were bringing up during this protest. So I just wanted to use this opportunity to make that comment.
Thank you. I agree. Communication in our community is essential, and facts, and getting the word out. And I think we're always looking for better ways to make sure that we reach everyone, and certainly I would think we would want to follow up with that. Any other comments? Okay. Ready then? I would like a roll call vote, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Okay. The resolution passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay. We're going to move on now into the regular business and item 4A. And so, Mr. Gruber or Mr. Carmel, I'd like for you to introduce the item.
Thank you, Madam President and CCSD board members. Item 4A is discussion and consideration to adopt the recommendations of the ad hoc committee to evaluate fire prevention and response service options. The recommendation is staff recommends that the board discuss the following matter. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. I think at this time, before we discuss the matter, certainly from the ad hoc's work, we would like to then, I think, share the findings. And so, as you know, Vice President Thompson, or many of you know, has worked continuously with this over the last several months. In fact, then also with Mr. Cliff, who then did have need to leave us in October, so I joined that ad hoc, and we have met with many, many people and have not rushed on this, have given extremely careful consideration to hearing people, to looking at how we would best benefit everyone that is involved. And we're all stakeholders in this one. So, Vice President Thompson, I'll let you go ahead and begin.
Thank you, President Robinette. And I'm sorry that Mr. Cliff is not here today, because he did spend a lot of time with the work of the ad hoc committee. Just briefly, as you recall, last March we received a report from the San Luis Obispo County Grand Jury, which called upon us to take a look at the issue of the fire department, and had a number of recommendations that were addressed during the course of the committee's review. Generally speaking, we had several meetings with the community. We heard from probably, at the meetings, I think we had probably more than 100 people in attendance. about half of whom spoke and expressed their opinion. We also had a lot of feedback from constituents, from folks on both sides of the issue, and so we took all that into account. We also met with the existing members of the fire department and asked that they give us their frank opinion of whether or not they favored a move to CAL FIRE, and we also got a lot of input from them. And then after Mr. Clift departed the committee, I met with the reserve officers and had a similar discussion with them. Then when Mr. Clift left the committee and President Robinette joined in the review, we had meetings with CAL FIRE, and we also asked that our budget person, Mr. O'Reilly, meet with the CAL FIRE budget people to get a sense as to what the cost impact would be for a switch to CAL FIRE. With that, we prepared a report, and we have a number of findings that I'd like to share with the community, and along with some recommendations. Firstly, and I'll go through them, findings and conclusions, community members and CAL FIRE and Cambria CSD fire personnel were highly complimentary of the professionalism of CAL FIRE personnel and appreciated the services they provided to the community. Additionally, Cambria and the local CCSD fire department has clearly benefited from the increased CAL FIRE management involvement in the form of forest management funding and pending local hazardous mitigation plan funding, staff training, and supervision. And President Robinette, I think you wanted to add a comment in that regard.
Yes, at this, what I have found joining in when I did also begin to work with everyone, we've had time now to meet with everyone too, and it just is clear in my observations that this has been a highly professional process. I believe everyone from CAL FIRE, everyone from our CCSD fire department have benefited. I have heard this from people that work in both departments. And so I think out of everything where it's important that we always stay open-minded, when we get to the other side of it, I believe that people look back and they feel they have grown. And I hear this from everyone we have certainly met with. So I'll let you continue then.
Okay. Notwithstanding that, the community input we received was almost universally supportive of maintaining a CCSD fire department, and concerns ranged from the different orientation of CAL FIRE, wildfire versus structure, loss of local control, extra cost, reduction in service, and volunteer participation. And I have to say that I personally have had experience with our fire personnel, as other members of the board have, and so we certainly have we have that experience to show us what the benefit of our local department is. Thirdly, Cambria CSD fire personnel indicated from a financial and career advancement position they would likely benefit by a transfer to CAL FIRE. However, all opposed a transfer to the state agency based primarily on what they described as quality of life issues. For instance, work schedule, transfers to areas outside the community, child care issues, and the like. They also indicated that the community benefited from their knowledge of the area, awareness of citizens at risk for medical needs, and relationships with North Coast Ocean Rescue and Cambria Emergency Response Team volunteers, both supported by the CCSD with budgeted funding. And finally, a financial analysis conducted jointly by fiscal staff of CCSD and CAL FIRE determined that based upon current estimates, an agreement with CAL FIRE would cost up to $145,000 more than the amount currently projected for the CCSD fire department. And the $145,000, as pointed out by Ms. Tanner in her article yesterday, was based upon the fact that under a contract arrangement, CAL FIRE would budget at that top step. And so any contract would likely be less than that, but That would be the projected figure based upon that budget requirement. And this is primarily due to labor costs, which could go even higher depending upon ongoing state and Cal Fire union negotiations, costs which would be passed on to local contracts. Therefore, the ad hoc committee recommends.
First recommendation is that the CCSD thank and acknowledge Cal Fire for providing outstanding interim management services to this community during the period of this fire service examination. We value their local collaboration and partnership.
Okay, the second recommendation is that the CCSD board affirm its intention to maintain the CCSD fire department based upon its examination of the fire service cost issue and the support expressed by a great many Cambrians.
And third recommendation is that the board direct the general manager to proceed with the search for a permanent fire chief by utilizing a professional recruitment firm in order to secure a highly qualified fire chief and execute a contract not to exceed $30,000. Additionally, hire said chief to allow for a smooth transition period prior to the termination of Cal Fire management contract on July 1st, 2016.
Then the grand jury report also recommended that that there be continued discussions with the healthcare district in order to determine what opportunities there were to integrate and coordinate activities. And so we are making that a recommendation with the goal of effectively reducing administrative costs and improving services. And then finally, additionally, a part of the grand jury report that the CCSD and fire department develop a plan for updating fire equipment and establish a replacement fund for such equipment. And then that this grand jury be provided with a copy of this report. And that concludes my report.
That concludes our findings. And before we move to a vote on this, we have public comment, so we'd like to hear. We have two people that would like to come. No, let's see. We have three. And so on public comment first, we're going to hear from Jerry Wood.
Good morning, President Robinette and board. I have been requested by Bill Knoop, who has severe medical problems, cannot attend. So he wrote a letter to the board, which I have given copies to Monique. So you'll have the hard copies, and be advised that this letter was written February 4th prior to the public presentation of your recommendations. Letter reads, February 4th, 2016, President Robinette and CCSD Board of Directors. I have asked Jerry Wood to read this letter since I am unable to attend due to a health issue. I want to thank the board, especially the fire ad hoc committee, for their due diligence in this important matter. I would like to take this last opportunity to state my professional and personal plea for that the Cambria Fire Department remain local. I believe that the facts have become self-evident that with your own research and testimony before the board, the importance of having men and women committed to our fire department for their careers cannot be understated. My thanks to the board and the many varied tasks that you are charged with and the excellent way you accomplish these difficult problems. Sincerely, William E. Knoop. And on my, just to save from coming up again, I totally concur with Bill's statements. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have, let's see, Bob Putney's on two of these. Okay. Next is Christy Jenkins. There she is. I couldn't see you.
I can't see either, so. It's a little vertical. Yes.
Yes. You are standing now, right?
It's not Jeopardy. I don't have my box.
Welcome, Christy.
Good morning, all of the directors, President Robinette, your general manager, all of your staff. Most of you know who I am. I've lived here for 30 years. I am a healthcare professional with 50 years of experience in healthcare. I've taught for 14 years at Hancock in fire and public services. I also taught it 5 years at Cuesta in Health Occupations and Services. And I am a trustee on the Healthcare District Board for 8 years, and I'm currently serving as the president. I want to talk about recommendation number four, that the CCSD reopen discussions with the healthcare district to determine opportunities to integrate and coordinate activities with the goal of effectively reducing administrative cost. I would commend the committee in this recommendation, recognizing that the CCSD and the CCHD boards have over many years had in-depth discussions in efforts to coordinate both the medical services between the two agencies to provide the effective and cost-effective delivery of emergency medical services to the community of Cambria and to the district, which is much bigger than the community of Cambria. I would hope that the directors and the general manager are aware that both the fire department paramedics and EMTs, which are three at a time, and the healthcare district paramedics and EMT, which are four at a time, currently coordinate all of their activities for the community 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The link on your CCSD fire and safety also states that the majority of the calls received by the CCSD fire department are for emergency and rescue services, and together with the healthcare district, our local ambulance service, that the fire department provides a team effort approach to emergency services. That's what your website says. The provision of 24-hour a day, 7 days a week, ALS, BLS level of care using the state-of-the-art equipment that we have to provide this service, especially cardiac, pulmonary, and rescue, continues to be provided whether the boards are talking to each other or not. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I would suggest that we do have a fiduciary responsibility, both agencies, to continue these discussions. Thank you.
Thank you, Christy.
Madam Chair, if I may, speaking as one board member, that's music to my ears.
Thank you. And we will take this discussion up further. Okay, next on public comment, Joseph Gibson.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Joseph Gibson. On behalf of the Cambria Professional Firefighters Association and the International Association of Firefighters Local 4635, I'd like to say that we agree with the findings and support the recommendations of the ad hoc committee in the report on fire prevention and response service options. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that we have also Bob Putney.
Good morning, members of the board, staff. I put into talk on 4A and 4B. Do you want me to combine those?
No, if you would, they're not the same. So if you would go ahead and talk about A
okay.
first.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to thank staff and thank the board for this encouraging direction that they've gone. I believe that having local control of our department and having our people work here locally, be responsible locally, is a great move. And I know that makes everyone feel better. I would like to acknowledge also the professionalism of CAL FIRE. They're a great organization, and I think in tough times here that they stood up and they worked very, very well. But I'm gratified that you've decided to keep our fire department here, keep local control, make sure that it serves the citizens, and that our people know how to get to all of our houses and don't get lost, which I think in this day and age, even with GPS, a GPS can get confusing. You can end up in a road that takes you nowhere. So GPS isn't always, GPS is fallible, where people with local experience aren't. So thank you very much for making this decision and supporting the community and giving us a chance to express our opinions. Thank you.
Thank you. And next on public comment, we have William Hollingsworth.
Good morning. William Hollingsworth, paramedic and captain with the fire department. Historically, when things like this come up, we try to always speak to this from a unified union standpoint and come in off duty and try to express the opinion and desires of the people that we work with. However, after discussing with all of the employee group, we all collectively felt that it was important enough that myself, being the senior member of the agency at this point, come forward and express not only the support of the direction from the ad hoc committee, but then also just an echo a sentiment that I've heard many of you already discuss, and that's the appreciation of the extreme professionalism of not only how it was completed, but also that of CAL FIRE specifically and the management they provided during this time period. For the last 8 months, there's obviously been a little bit of confusion and just lack of direction. We didn't know where it was going to go. We didn't know what the report was going to come out and say. And although we may all have our own opinions about what that's supposed to be, all of that is irrelevant to how well CAL FIRE did and how well they did and come in and provide that service for us. I've had the opportunity of working for a number of agencies now in my 24 years, and I have never in my experience worked in an area where two different agencies worked better and closer together. And I think you can talk to most anybody in this unit, in this CAL FIRE unit, in this area, and find that same sentiment. The close working relationship we have specifically with Station 10, the CAL FIRE station here, in my opinion, is unsurpassed. You could look at other places in the county. They work closely together, but our closeness and how we work together here, it, again, just surpasses that. And that was echoed in the management style and how Chief Reeder and specifically Chief Shalhoub came in and provided those services to us for the last 8 months. They obviously could have come in here with an iron fist and just dictated policy, and that's not what they did. They came in and supported us. They provided direction and change as appropriate. What they did provide was excellent, and we have zero complaints about that at all. And many of the things that they brought in are things that we have changed and updated because we all have the opportunity to improve. So specifically to Chief Reeder, the interim chief of the unit, thank you from our agency. What you guys have provided management-wise has been indispensable, and he's not here today, but Chief Shalhoub, who came in to a very difficult situation, approach this from the most appropriate way possible, and we have the utmost respect and appreciation for what he provided, not only in a service to you in coordination, but then as management and direction for us. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I think my time's up now. Is that what that means? I'm glad that you came up and shared this now through public comment, because that was going to be the next thing I wanted to ask, was to hear from our departments. And Chief Reeder, if you would like to share some of your observations, we would like to hear from you too. And I thought I saw Captain Torlano back there, but I can't. Is she standing? Okay, and so you may want to share a bit too, but let's hear from you, Chief Reeder. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Captain Hollingsworth, for those unexpected, very kind words, heartfelt from me too. From me, from our department, we understand and fully support the ad hoc committee's recommendation. And you haven't voted yet, but whichever way you vote today. It has been our honor to serve you and your department for the last 8 months, providing management for your department, working closely with you, with your staff, General Manager Gruber, and most importantly, I think, the relationship that has strengthened over that last 8 months with your folks on the ground doing the work every single day in your fire department. It has been truly an honor to nurture that relationship even better than it was before, and I am certain that will continue. Regardless of your decision today, we will remain engaged until You go through the next process, and again, it's just been our honor, and we look forward to our continued close working relationship here in the Cambria area. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Reeder. We're going to hold the applause because definitely we're all going to come back together on this. I just want to hear from some of the representatives from both departments, and I'd like to hear now from Captain Torlano.
Good morning, everybody. I wasn't prepared to speak today, but I'm happy to. I just wanted to echo the sentiments that Captain Hollingsworth and Chief Reeder said already. We can't be more grateful than the service that CAL FIRE has provided us, their leadership, and everything that we've learned over the last 8 months, I believe it's been. We are definitely a better department today than we were before they came in, and we are going to continue down that path. They're going to set us up for success, and we are all very excited about the future and what it holds, and hopefully some joint efforts with our ambulance brothers, and we're continuing a close relationship with CAL FIRE, which we already have, and I just wanted to thank you all.
Thank you. I would say you were quite well prepared, and it is truly what I've been listening to, and it is everyone speaking from the heart, and so I thank you for that, too. I also would like to thank everyone at this time. We have no other request for public comment, but I would like to thank everyone in this audience, because what we've done with everyone's openness, with our general manager's support, with the work of the ad hoc, with everyone involved, we have truly come to a place better than we started out. And I think the relationship with CAL FIRE, the relationship with our department is stronger than ever, and you can hear it. And much of it has to do with everyone sitting here and the support that you've all given to this. So at this time, I would like to give those speakers a fine round of applause and a thank you. Thank you. So we have no further public comment. And so do we have comments now from the board? And Director Rice.
Thank you, President Robinette. I want to begin my remarks by saying I completely support the idea of keeping this fire department as part of CCSD, 100%. That being said, I do think that we still have some challenges ahead, as these recommendations do seem to indicate, and including the next item that we have on the agenda, which is getting a new fire chief. I'm curious about whether we did a review of the levels of service, because I think this community doesn't even really know what levels of service they are being provided from the fire department and what services are actually available, what our fire department does for this community, because they do a lot of things that I probably don't even know. But I do know that they provide a lot of they provide help with changing out batteries and smoke detectors, which is great for people who have ceilings like the one in the vets hall here that they can't reach, and we don't want folks that are retired having to go up ladders and then falling off and having to call the 911 because they fell. So there are, and I believe that they still do help folks put car seats in properly, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a lot of services they provide, and I was just curious if the committee at all looked at what those services were when you were looking at the how much it would cost if we were to change over to CAL FIRE.
Vice President Thompson.
Well, we didn't look specifically at a cost-benefit analysis per se, but we did recognize the level of service that was provided by our folks, and that certainly included the rescue, the assistance to seniors, changing smoke detectors, getting upstairs after coming home from a medical procedure, and that sort of thing. And those kinds of things are terribly important to this community, considering our demographics. And that was certainly part of the equation. We didn't parse it out, but that was what we took into consideration.
Thank you. I appreciate that response. And with your indulgence, President Robinette, I just have a couple of other little comments. It seems to me that this is another area of communication where it would be a good idea for us to be projecting out what our fire department does and providing the fire department with. They give us a monthly report, which is spectacular, but it would be nice to provide the community with maybe we can go back to doing a newsletter on a quarterly basis or something, so that the community really knows what an exceedingly high level of service that our fire department is able to provide in a town this small. And they are extremely professional, and I'm thankful that we've got them, and sounds like we did good by having Cal Fire manage for a bit and give us some new enhancement to what they can, what their confidence in their ability to provide the services. So thank you so much for doing this, and I'm looking forward to the next item.
Okay, and Director Barringer.
Yes, I just want to comment that we didn't get to see this until our package got out, and so I'm sure that the public knows that the cost of us supporting our fire department has escalated a lot in the past, and it's going to continue to do so, especially with the paramedic services that we're giving. And I'd like to make sure that along with keeping our fire department local, my opinion is I think we should have more local people. I think there's only one employee that actually lives in Cambria. And I think one of the things we need to do is focus on our reserves. I know that we're probably paying them minimum wage, $10 an hour, and next year it'll be $11 an hour. I'd like to see a way that we could look closely at getting efficiencies, and possibly even with the healthcare district, coming up with efficiencies so that we can take those funds and encourage our reserves to stay local and to support that. I do support most of the recommendations. The one that I was actually surprised to see is the third recommendation that we in this particular agenda item, that we direct the general manager to get a headhunter, so to speak, to hire a new chief. I hope that we could postpone that for a bit. Perhaps there's with the help of Cal Fire, the people that are working very closely together, and if we can get people to raise their hand over the next couple of weeks before we authorize the general manager to expend $30,000 on a recruitment effort. I haven't had a chance to look at the value of that yet, and so I support all of the recommendations except for number three.
Okay, any other comments before I ask for a motion? I'm going to comment too, but go ahead. If it's a comment, I'm waiting on the motion.
Understanding that the district's plate is really full right now. But priorities and opportunities being what they are, I would really like to see us follow up with the invitation we received from Christy Jenkins to rekindle the discussions with the healthcare district board about how we can improve efficiencies and maybe even reach some sort of an agreement that would provide for a unified effort for paramedic and fire service.
Okay.
I would like to move.
I would like to comment first, and then we will be ready for a motion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go to the motion, I simply wanted to just share and cannot overstate that this has been a process, and it will continue to be a process. It's what we wanted. It was something that has very much been a professional pursuit, and it has been something where I think trust and respect has come out so strong, so loud, so clear. The professional growth and insight for everyone I think, has been a benefit to both the departments. The mutual respect and the appreciation has come from everyone in, related to this in both departments, from their willingness and their openness to learn from each other. And that we need, and I know and trust, will be something that continues. It is very much a collaboration and a partnership, and I think our community is very fortunate to have two such fine departments as we have. So we're ready for the motion, and Director Rice?
Well, if I could, I'm
yes?
sorry. Just a comment with respect to Director Berenger's comments about reserves and so forth. Under the SAFER grant, the reserves have been given the opportunity to apply for those positions, and so it's really kind of an opportunity for them to first of all get experience as a regular full-time fire person, so that they can use that either in terms of future employment or what have you. But that is really good experience for them, and also to provide employment. And beyond that, the department is at this point interviewing more potential reserves. And so certainly we want to make that opportunity available to as many folks as possible.
Okay. And Director Rice.
I move that the board adopt recommendations 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 of the ad hoc committee, and I will speak to why I didn't include 3 in that motion.
I'd second the motion.
So the reason I skipped that one is the next item speaks directly to this, and it seems to me if we were to pass this with the recommendation that we direct the general manager, there'd be almost no reason for us to have a discussion on the next item. If we've already essentially said that we need to direct him to do this, this action here seems like it's ahead of its time and will be taken up as the next item, which I can't see as being, since the ad hoc committee is recommending that we do this, I can't see that recommendation would be.
I second the motion.
So that's.
So, okay, so
that's
we,
why
have,
I skipped
we have
that
a motion with one modification, and that is to discuss then actually what was in the motion under recommendations on item 3, which is our next item to discuss. Mm-hmm. Is that acceptable to everyone? Okay, then I think we have a motion and a second with that modification, and I'd like a roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you very much
to
the committee for their work on that.
Thank you. Okay, now we're moving to item 4B, and so I would like to have General Manager Gruber introduce the item, please.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm going to defer this one to District Counsel Tim Carmel.
Okay, Mr. Carmel.
Madam President, members of the board, as you just heard in the last item, recommendation number 3 from the ad hoc committee reads that the board direct the general manager to proceed with the search for a permanent fire chief by utilizing a professional recruitment firm in order to secure a highly qualified fire chief and execute a contract not to exceed $30,000. The recommendation in the staff report is that the board authorize the general manager to enter into an agreement with Bob Murray and Associates, a firm with extensive experience in recruiting fire chiefs, for about $25,000. That's the estimate. Be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Do we have public comment? Okay. Yes, we have some public comment. And so the first is Jerry Wood.
Good morning again. Again, this is a letter from Bill Knoop. Because of his illness, he can't come. Letters dated February 4th, 2016. President Robinette and CCSD Board of Directors, thank you for your commitment to keep the Cambria Fire Department local, as this will provide the benefit of our community. To further benefit Cambria, I feel it is necessary that we hire internally. I would like to take this opportunity to recommend Captain William Hollingsworth. I have known this man for 10 years, know that he has the skills, education, qualifications, and necessary to be an exemplary chief. He is an outstanding employee with strong personal commitment and caring for others. This is evidenced by the support that not only from the community members, he has myself, but in the support of his peers and fellow firefighters. I have reviewed Captain Hollingsworth's certificates, education, training, and his plans for continuing education and feel that he is more than qualified to fill the position of chief. He has often fulfilled chief's duties in his current position with the department when necessary. As a citizen of Cambria, I feel it is necessary that is unnecessary funds to look outside the department and would be a waste of taxpayer money, especially when a qualified individual exists within the department. Promoting internally would be the best option for a number of reasons, including but not limited to morale of the department, utilizing an already qualified and trained employee, saving taxpayer money. Furthermore, this would be in the best interest of the CCSD because they cannot lose. Utilizing a probationary period would allow for checks and balances, and with the comfort of knowing that if he does not work out, you can pursue other options. That being said, I firmly believe in promoting Captain Hollingsworth would allow the opportunity for him to prove what I and many others already know, that he will make a terrific asset as chief. Sincerely, William E. Canoop. And so I don't have to come up again. I would like to add my agreement with this letter, and I would also like to take just a short minute to say, with the decision to retain our Cambria Fire Department, I renew this as a new beginning for the citizens of Cambria and the CCSD. We now have a totally fresh slate with new and complex challenges to address and solve. Let us all work together to do our best and move on in a positive manner for our common goal, the betterment of Cambria. Thank you.
Thank you. Next public comment on this item 4B, Bob Hutney. I know the feeling. Walk faster now.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Madam President, members of the board and staff. I want to echo some of the comments that previously mentioned. I have a different approach. I don't think it's bad to advertise for a chief. What I'm worried about is when you hire a headhunter like this company, and I've taken their tests when I was in the fire business. They do a great job. They have a great infrastructure inside to reach out to people that are in their system, but they often overlook and they don't invest themselves in the community to find if there are local resources, and often people get passed over. I think when we started this process, one of the reasons that CAL FIRE was said to bring in is that there weren't any candidates in the department that could lead the department, and I disagree with that greatly. I think you have some great candidates in the department. I'm worried that they won't be in the mix. But I would also challenge you that I don't think you need to spend $30,000. I think there's technical expertise. Every county I've worked in the state, and I've even traveled to other counties to sit on oral boards for division chief, assistant chief. Fire departments are always willing to share resources to do technical oral boards, to do oral boards to recommend to you who's the best hire. So I would say that if you put this out and brought candidates in and had our own candidates participate, I think you would be greatly surprised that our people would come out very high in the candidate process. So I'd like to ask you to save some of the taxpayers' money, do a local recruitment and hiring, advertise state, Western region-wide through Western Chiefs, get as many applicants, and test here locally, use the resources of the county who know what Cambria Fire Department needs to respond and depend on them, and they depend on our department every day. Thank you.
Thank you. Next public comment is Don Putney.
So there were two Bob Putneys. I am Bob's wife, and I am the driving force behind Keep Cambria Fire Local. I sat in a CCSD meeting and listened to a general manager say there were no viable candidates in Cambria Fire. There was one, and there still is one, if not more. I ask all of you to go back when you first were merging in your professions and someone told you if anyone ever told you in a public forum that you were not capable of doing a job. And I ask you what that would have sat on you like. Pardon me, I have a bit of an allergy with the pine pollen. That's when I decided it was time to educate the public fairly with facts. Because a fire service is a very complicated business to understand and not something that someone not married or familiar with it from a dispatcher's point of view like I am, or a public safety being in the police service like I was, could really understand, because it's complicated. You have viable candidates. You have a wonderful fire department. This thing about them being local, they can't afford to be local, but they're dedicated. They have integrity. To even get up here on a mic in uniform shows you the integrity, the honesty. That man is a foster parent. How many of you would take parents or other people's kids inside your home? We're talking about, look at the individual people who make up your fire department. And how many of these people out here came here because we educated them? We didn't do a slander thing. We didn't trash Cal Fire. We need Cal Fire. We wanted to educate the citizens that you were going to remove, potentially remove, because you were going to lose control and give it to a state agency. We wanted to wake up. Please wake up. $30,000 could get you someone trained to be fire prevention. You'd have a well-rounded fire department. You already have someone who's trained himself. Please listen. Please promote from within if you can, because they're already dedicated. They already love this community. They're already here. Promote. Give them a chance to earn more money. Give them a chance to show you how much they love this community. Because I needed Bob's expertise, because he knows how to get into the systems to give the citizens facts. You have a resource, and you haven't even used him. Not one of you have asked him for his advice, and he was the fire chief here. So wake up, please. This is my community. I have a home here. I want it saved, and I trust them with my life. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further public comments, so we'll start with discussion from the board.
Yes.
Director Sanders.
Madam President, if I'm not mistaken, there's a publication that goes out to every firefighter in the western United States. Is that, maybe Jerry Wood knows, if I may ask him, Madam President?
Yes.
Isn't it called Western Fire?
Western Fire Chief, or Western Fire? Yeah, that's correct.
Western Fire.
Yeah, it's effectively a jobs available specifically for fire service.
So firefighters regularly look at it. They see what jobs are open around the western United States, and they submit applications if they want to.
And they're aware of everything that's going on in the state or in the western states.
Do you happen to know off the top of your head how much it costs to advertise in that?
No, I do not specifically know, but it can't. It's not okay. Extraordinary
well,
amount.
I'm struck by the comments that have been made, and I've been giving this some thought over the past couple of weeks. $30,000 is a lot of money. If it was up to me, I'd pay the reservists more money out of that $30,000. I mean, $10 an hour to go into a burning house, give me a break. So if there's an opportunity to save $30,000 here, and if we can get a good response, a good cross-section of people who might be interested in the job that the general manager and the board can review, then I would be all in favor of saving the $30,000 and just advertise in the Western Fire publication.
Yes. Yeah, Director Barringer.
Yeah, and by the way, I've used Headhunters, been recruited, as probably many of you have, and there's great value to it. They not only find a person, but they vet them, they make sure that it's the right person, etc. But that said, I think that as a minimum, we should take a couple of weeks, and we can address this just on the next agenda item next week, or table it for at least a period of time. I think a lot of people watch this this show, and some people might want to raise their hand. Maybe Eric Shalhoub would raise his hand. We might see someone in the next couple of weeks that is interested in this position, and I think we should save some money, and I would support either tabling this for a period of time and readdressing it within a month. And by the way, you know, we're trying to get this done because the contract with CAL FIRE ends. Actually, we have to give them a certain notice. We can always push that end date out if that's an issue.
Vice President Thompson?
Well, I very seldom vote against my own motion, but I'm persuaded by the comments and by the comments made by Director Sanders, and I think that it would be a good idea to take this item off the table and come back. I think that it makes sense to. Well, first of all, I agree that we have very qualified candidates within the department, and so this was not intended to preclude any of the current personnel from applying. But I also think it's important that we throw the net out there to see, you know, just from a public policy matter, that we need to get a sense for the list of candidates that are interested. So I would also concur with taking this off the table and giving it some more thought and perhaps coming back with a better approach.
And Director Rice?
I too tend to agree with the idea of doing some advertising and ensuring that some of my questions that I had based on these RFPs are moot if we're going to go in this other direction. But I do want to make sure that it's clear, General Manager Gruber and Mr. Carmel, I would like to make sure that it's very clear from the outset what the role is of the board in this process, because I believe that we hire the general manager and he's responsible. The other concern that I have in going this direction, which I fully support, but I have a concern that I don't know that we have the staff manpower to be able to manage us doing this, because we are really light in the amount of staff that we have. We do have a new person, I believe, but I don't know if I think that's part of why this particular path was selected. I don't think we should spend the money if we can save it, but I also don't want to overburden an already burdened staff. That's my concern on that, and I'd like to at least see that we hire somebody to do the background check so that we get it done by somebody who has the experience to know what to check in when we get to that point in the process. But I think either tabling or going the other direction in consideration of staff, I think it's important we don't overburden them.
It's my turn first.
Okay, good.
Okay, and we've each had our turn, so I will take my turn, but then I'll come back to Director Bowerinder too. I think this is excellent discussion. I think that from my vantage point, and I certainly agree with what people are saying here around our table, but I would also like to step back and review the process. Now, we have had, it is my understanding, we have hired from outside for our last two chiefs. I know that for sure. And that perhaps came from a search, and it may have just come from application. So I'm certainly willing to discuss this further, too. I think there should be some way to advertise, and I think people that seem qualified should certainly have the opportunity to apply from here, from perhaps elsewhere. I agree, too. We do know that we work on a very lean, we've made cutbacks and we work with a lean staff, and so I would be willing, rather than the amount that we requested here for a professional search team, I would be interested in hearing from staff in between on if we could even take a certain amount of money and hire someone that it would be the person who has the kind of skill set to do searches and to background checks, because those things do have to happen. So I would be willing that the district could put some money into it and not just say, oh, Monique, you know, in your spare time, would you go ahead and do that now, too? I realize that that's not practical. So I would look for someone that understands how you do background searches, someone that could take the paperwork as it comes in, and then it will go through the process of review, and perhaps we pick the top five candidates from that screening, and then we move forward to interviews for a selection. But we definitely leave it open. We need to find out about the advertising then, and that's going to take some help from someone too. So there's a lot of steps from what we're talking about to actually deciding who's going to do the work, how much would it cost us, and comparing it then to what had been suggested. One thing for clarification on this, with the current recommendation of the search team that you have made, we have here today, that is open to everyone, isn't it? It would be open to everyone. But it, I need to ask these questions. These are important questions, because I don't want anyone screened out. I don't want anyone screened out.
Anybody, Madam President, anybody can
capable.
Apply. Anybody can apply, but if you read Bob Murray's detailed presentation, and then from that pool, they look at 10 or 12 of the top candidates, and they interview those, and then they make a selection from a smaller group. So that's how the process works. Anybody can apply for anything. We can all apply for any position throughout the United States we want. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're qualified for that position. And that's where the person, the Bob Murray, comes in, is determining who is the best fit for the community.
Okay, well, I'm thinking we want at least today here to have a little more think time. That seems apparent,
right,
rather than going forward. Director Behringer?
Yes, and I want to reiterate, I'm suggesting we table this for 2 weeks or a month so that we can really understand how we want to do this process. But I'd also like to ask legal counsel a question, in that the board, really, the personnel issues are always the responsibility of the general manager. And I've always been a little bit not that happy with it, but that's fine. In this case, I think this position is so important that is there a possibility that the board members or maybe even an ad hoc committee could be involved in this search?
Legally, certainly that's possible. But you're right, under your code and under your personnel rules, the appointing authority for everyone except the general manager and me is the general manager. So ultimately, it's his decision. Of course, he defers to the board in terms of the process you choose to use. He could reject that idea, but I know that Jerry's sensitive to the desires of the board, and if that's the direction that the board wants him to go, I'm sure that's the direction that he will go.
Right. And to answer your question, President Robinette, you know, the right people to do all that vetting is, in fact, these guys, and that's why they're charging you the money to do it. They'll do it appropriately, but I think we need some think time on it.
Think time is what I'm sensing here, and so we would want to table it then, I think, to come back. I do know, since we have our next full board meeting less than 1 week from now, that this would not work until the March agenda for sure. So do we have a motion on this now? Director Sanders?
I move that this matter be tabled until the March regular meeting.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we table this and have a little more think time on it, look at what the opportunities of feasibility is and where we want to go. Any further discussion on this? Director Rice.
Thank you, Madam President. I would just like to make sure that when this does come back in March, that we're clear about what role the board will play, because I believe there is a part in each of these proposals that, even if we don't go with one of these firms, talks about setting what it is that we are going to expect of a fire chief, and that's where it comes into the policy level. So I would like to make sure that there is a place for the board, because it is such an important position. And I'd like to be clear about what that is, so that the community knows and so that the general manager is aware about what's both appropriate and what we think that we would like to do. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to point out is delaying this until March will mean that we will have to extend our contract with CAL FIRE, and it sounds like we don't have any objection either from CAL FIRE or our folks, which is great, but even if we started next Monday, it's going to be June 6th on Bob Murray's schedule before we get to an appointment, and that's if everything goes according to plan. Mm-hmm. So,
and you have to, Madam President, you have to give the person, if it's an external candidate, the opportunity to, you know, relocate, which is about a month, and then you have to, I wanted a transition period, so we can put it off a month, but I don't know what we're tabling. We need to make a decision. If this is a route you guys want to go, no, it sounds like not, or we handle the recruitment ourselves. I think it's just complicating it by putting it off and table. What are we tabling? I'm not clear on what we're tabling. We don't need to have any more discussion. It sounds like the board doesn't want to go with the recruitment firm, and I can respect that. So let's decide to go with a recruitment, you know, let staff handle it, and we'll do it, and we'll start putting the pieces together, and hopefully we can move forward. I don't think it's fair to our fire department. I don't think it's fair to CAL FIRE to say, okay, we're going to put this on March's agenda and think about it for a month, when it sounds like there's a consensus already amongst the board and staff's okay with that. We'd rather just hit the ground running and get this process underway versus tabling it for a month. I don't see any purpose in that.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, because time does kind of tend to lag on. So maybe we should spend just a few more minutes and make, you know, give a little more structure to and concreteness to what we're talking about here. Because it, from what I hear so far, we're talking about not necessarily needing to work with a search firm. We are talking about I think we can't expect to have you and your department do this without assistance. So we need to put some money to that, and you need to find the appropriately trained person that is going to come from probably from human resources background somewhere.
Madam President, we can do it. I mean, we're handling 15 recruitments right now, and what it is. Really working with you and maybe some community members, and as Director Rice identified, those qualities that we're looking for in a fire chief, maybe reaching out to the community and finding what those are, and then putting a brochure together and just distributing that out to the Western Fire and things like that. Also, circulating it internally, I would encourage our folks to apply. There are a million different fire chief brochures out there on the website, as Ms. Putney and other people indicated. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think that many of the needs that we have are similar to what other communities have had and need. We're unique in a little ways as far as the forest goes and things like that, but I really don't. I think we're bringing somebody. We can do it. Staff can. Me and District Council and Monique, and maybe the Fire Ad Hoc Committee. We can pound this out relatively quick.
Madam President,
this is,
Madam Chair.
This is what I'm thinking. We have an ad hoc that's going to continue with fire services in place, and we certainly can get some guidance on. You know, it's like any professional job. You have certain qualifications, certain background, education, experience, work experience. It's still always going to be that you have those certain job skills that you're looking for. And we certainly could put that together, I would think, in-house here.
Madam President, can I make a comment?
Yes.
My desire wasn't to stop the recruitment effort. My desire was that recruiting can start tomorrow whether we use a firm or not. and I was hoping that a bluebird would fly in the window, and perhaps, you know, we could address the before we spent the $30,000, we might have other avenues, and that's all I'm saying. And so the recruitment could be internal. What we could do as a possibility is say that we authorize the general manager to spend $30,000 on recruitment and give him direction that he takes some quick action before hiring a search firm.
Yeah, and up to $30,000.
Something like that. That's a
something
proposal.
Like that. You have an ad hoc in place.
And if he needs the money for internal recruitment, he has
What is your response, General Manager Gruber?
I'm afraid to say what I'm going to say. If you give me $30,000, I'm going to pick up the phone and tell Bob Burr to start on the recruitment. Even though that's not what you want, but I respect whatever you guys, whatever the board. I work for you, and I'm hearing the community's input. So you tell me what you want me to do, and I don't necessarily know you need to allocate me any money. We'll get the ad hoc committee together, and I got some ideas I've shared with you already. Maybe the board would pick one member from the community at large. We could have that as one of the interview panels. Mm-hmm. You could each pick a representative, and then but we have an ad hoc committee in place, and don't give me $30,000 and tell me to go take care of the recruitment because, I'm not telling you not to, but we can do this internally. I'm not even looking at Monique. I'm trying to keep my, because really
don't
I say we,
look over there.
But there's a lot of good folks in town that we can use, their resources too, and have them help us in the process. So
I do the idea of the screening too, of perhaps a board picking each of us, selecting a community member as one level or one stage of screening. We would want to maybe do that.
Yeah, we can meet with the ad hoc committee, and we can start laying out the process, mm-hmm. and
the structure.
I don't want to say it's not that difficult of a process, but it's a process that we can get done. I mean, we got the creek being cleared out right now, and we came to you only a couple of weeks ago saying the creek's all clogged up. So I think we can all come together and come up with a really good idea for recruitment and save $30,000. So.
Director Sanders.
Madam Chair, just to kind of clear the decks here, I'm going to withdraw my motion make a substitute motion.
All right.
The substitute motion would be that the general manager be directed to initiate a recruitment process for a new fire chief, that it be handled in-house, and that he is to report back to us if he needs any assistance in that regard, and that at a minimum the ad hoc committee be involved in that process.
Oh,
okay. It's
you
been,
already seconded. Okay.
Oh, okay. It's been moved and seconded by who then?
Mike Vice, Thompson.
Okay, by Vice President Thompson. We move forward in house.
Madam President.
My only. Mm-hmm. Question back on this modification possibly is somewhere in there I would still like to include that this may have some additional expense that should be, it shouldn't be that just the staff that's existing here do that recruitment. It's a big recruitment.
That's up to the ad hoc committee and the general manager to report back to the board if there's some sort of an extraordinary expense.
Extraordinary.
That the board has to approve.
I like the word extraordinary. Yes, Mr.
Madam
Carmel?
President, I have to interject here. So this agenda item has been set up very narrowly. I'll read you the description. Discussion and consideration to authorize the general manager to execute an agreement with Bob Murray and Associates to conduct an executive recruitment for a fire chief. That's what you're dealing with. This robust discussion is fantastic, and obviously we're all listening, and the general manager hears very clearly what's expected. But no formal motion can be made that's outside the scope of what's actually set up in the agenda description. And I'm sorry, the Brown Act constrains you in a way that sometimes strangles you.
Okay.
But I think it's important. We can either bring this back for another robust discussion, but clearly the general manager, who has the power to move this forward on his own, it doesn't have anything to do with the board other than the broad policy considerations. a motion beyond what's actually agendized would be inappropriate under these circumstances. But I think I have to emphasize that we've all heard very clearly what's expected, and certainly that'll be implemented. But again, a motion itself would go a little bit too far in terms of the Brown Act.
Could I move that we table?
Question, and I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Question, Dan, knowing what seems to be the direction that you're hearing now from the board, because we have a full agenda on the 18th, and since we've already had a robust discussion regarding what we think would be more appropriate, if we wouldn't tie up too much time on the 18th, knowing that we've already discussed this, is it appropriate we could bring a modified motion back on the 18th?
We could certainly bring an item back that frames the issues so that you could continue on with this robust discussion and then take some level of action to direct the manager appropriately, however you determine.
Madam Chair, Mark Twain once said that a lawyer who represents himself has a fool for a client. But I completely disagree with counsel. The motion simply authorizes the general manager to do what the general manager is legally empowered to do. That's all it does. But for the sake of getting on with it, I'll withdraw it.
And Mr. Carmel?
Respectfully, I disagree just because of the nature of the Brown Act, and I know it's an extremely strict interpretation that I'm making. But I think the observation of Director Sanders is correct, and that is we've heard everything, and I don't think it takes a motion for us to understand mm-hmm. and to move that forward.
Okay, so we're not doing a motion, but we have a better, after this discussion, understanding of of the options that you have available. Okay, so then
Madam
President, have a motion. Yes.
I think the motion should be to table this item, period. To table the item.
But we have enough information to get mm-hmm. started, correct? Okay.
Know.
There we go.
Do you have a second? We have to get rid of this business, right? So tabling it, we need a second and a vote, right?
Well, you wouldn't formally have to do anything.
Okay.
It would just fade away on its own.
Okay, so we've made it all go away now? No. I think we have direction. Okay, so we are clear. Director Rice?
Just a really quick question that Mr. O'Reilly may need to answer. I'm going to make the assumption, since we knew we were only going to have CAL FIRE for a year, that we put some money in the budget already for doing this. Is that the case for this year's budget? It was already in there, some
yeah,
amount
that,
of money?
Yeah, that's correct. There's $25,000 in the fire budget for chief recruitment, and the general manager is already authorized to spend it.
I mean, okay.
Unless you take that authority away, it's there.
Okay.
Good question. So the money's there.
So the money's there. We're just not going to forward with authorizing this.
Good for that clarification. Okay. So we've got the money. We're ready to go with modification. Okay, then. Let's move on then to 4C. And General Manager Gruber, if you would introduce item 4C.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 4C is discussion and consideration to appoint a delegate to vote on behalf of the CCSD for LAFCO Special District Representative at the annual California Association meeting and to choose a candidate to support. Let me just read the recommendation so it's clear. It's recommended that the Board of Directors discuss and consider appointing a delegate to vote for the Special District Representative on Local Area Formation Commission, which is LAFCO, on behalf of the Cambria Community Services District at the annual meeting in San Luis Obispo Chapter of the California Special District Association on Friday, February 19th, that's next Friday, 2016. It is further recommended that the Board of Directors choose the candidate that the CCSD will support. And I believe you have all the candidates' information, at least some of them. I think we included all the information that we had for you to make that selection process. One thing I will say is there is a good number of candidates seeking this. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Madam President.
Thank you. Okay, so we have no request for public comment on this. So we are into discussion, and so we are going to talk about, I think what we're going to do momentarily is have a roll call vote on the candidates or the people that are, we have been given information for. And then we are also going to have a representative that will go to the Board of Directors, the California Special District Association on February 19th, and that person will go ahead and carry our vote for us. And on that, Director Rice, I was wondering if you would like to be our representative and take the vote forward.
Thank you, President Robinette. I appreciate that suggestion. I would be happy to do that for the district. I wanted to let folks know I talked with Anthony Calvins, who's CSDA, active with the CSDA, and they were short of a quorum by two. So having somebody from our district go will make a difference, and I think that will hopefully they'll get a quorum. If they don't get a quorum, then the vote will happen differently. But I'm happy to go and represent the district.
Okay, so, and that's on next Friday?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
Monique, did you get that? I'm going to the...
Okay. And do we have any other people that are going to attend that? Okay, so Vice President Thompson, you'll be there too. Okay, very good. Okay, so then I think what we want to do next is we have really no public comment, just discussion on do we want to discuss these people, or do you want to just go to the roll call vote and see what you have in mind and see how it comes out? Yes.
I'll just comment. I did look at the... at the applicants. I did read the material. We did have Ed Eby. I think he stopped by and came here, and I thought that was significant. And if he did that to every district, he's probably going to do well. But I do have personal contact with Robert Enns and Alan Fields, and Alan is a member of a club that I'm in, and I know him personally. I found him to be a very very reasonable person, and I think he would represent us well. On the other hand, I also have a long-term relationship with Robert Enns. He's a contractor. He's done some work for me, and I have gone to several meetings where he's shown himself to be highly qualified. And from my personal perspective, the reason Robert Enns would tip the scale is he's already an alternate member on the LAFCO board. For 2 years, he's been a non-voting member, and I think he's looking forward to actually doing a vote. So even though it's a close tie from my personal perspective...
Isn't EB the alternate?
He might also, but Robert Enns is an alternate on the board. So with that said... my recommendation, even though it's a close call, would be Robert Enns.
Okay. Who would like to... Discussion?
I'm a little confused then. So the reason we're doing this is because Merle had resigned, and so they need to fill the special district position on LAFCO. And who's currently in that position? Is that Robert Enns is currently acting? Because he was the alternate, or
he's the alternate, so he'd be the rep.
So who's currently representing special districts?
The voting representative seat is vacant, so the alternate, Robert Enns, is the one that would be voting at this point in time.
So he's the one that it. So is there current? There's currently no alternate. Is that?
Well, no. If Robert Enns was appointed to LAFCO, then the alternate seat would become available. And there's actually a provision in the report that was given to us by David Church, the executive director. It's in the packet, and it says If the alternate LAFCO commissioner is elected to the regular position, nominations from the floor for filling the term of the vacated alternate position may be considered and a vote conducted at the meeting. So if Robert Enns was elected, then the vote would be on would be for the alternate seat.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. So then I would move that this board support Robert Enns as the regular LAFCO member and authorize me to vote for Ed Eby for the alternate if that position were to become available.
I'm sorry, say that the last part again. You're suggesting, you're moving that we support Robert Enns, and what was the second part?
That in the, because he's the alternate, we would need to fill an alternate for special districts, and that for that position we support Ed Eby.
Oh, okay.
If that were to come up.
Right, okay. Discussion?
That way I would be authorized to vote on both of those if that was the case.
All right. Is there a second to that?
Well, a discussion. I'm not going to second that at the moment.
Okay,
I think it's a great idea to have that pre-thought, but again, Alan Fields is a local person from San Simeon, and I don't have an opinion on Eby except that he did show up, and perhaps another board member, if they prefer someone else, fine, but I'll remain silent at the moment on that.
Since I didn't get a second, can I make a different motion? Because that motion dies, right?
Yes.
So I move that we support Robert Enns for the regular LAFCO position.
Yeah, and then you can play it by ear.
Could I make a friendly amendment to that, that we support Robert Enns for the regular position and at the appropriate time support Alan Fields for the alternate position?
That's acceptable to me.
All right. Is there a second to that? I second it. It's been moved and seconded. Discussion? Were you going to second it? Okay.
Yeah, I would have, but you did already, so that's fine.
Okay, all right. Further discussion? All right, I think we're ready then for our roll call vote.
Director Rice?
Yes.
President Robinette?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Yes.
Director Sanders?
Yes.
Vice President Thompson?
Yes.
Okay, so.
And the motion passes 5-0. Okay, so that concludes our business for today. So thank you for staying. We appreciate that. Meeting is adjourned.
Amen.